There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention.
The government is an emergency.
Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Jones. Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
We have a way to deal with that, but I come.
What? What was that?
We have a way to deal with that where I come from.
Why are you playing Thunderball? Why'd you pick Thunderball?
It was on the new soundboard.
Oh, man, Lou. See what happens when you don't prep? You just pick something at random, and it's just, I didn't even, nobody even caught that. And your volumes were all off. Oh, wait, are we doing the show now? This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program coming to you live. It's the 29th of December, 2010 still. I can still say that, 2010. We're coming to you from the little Commonwealth of Korea in Central California. The People's Republic of California behind enemy lines, as always gets pointed out to me, the left coast. And we're being inundated with rain again and all kinds of stuff. Last night I had nightmares that tornadoes came. I wonder if that'll happen. I wonder if those will come to fruition. That'd be kind of fun to watch people here freak out when tornadoes are hitting. See how Californians react to that. Every year they get mud, flood, rain, fire, riots, whatever. And every year they act like it's the first time they've ever seen calamity. It's just, I've never seen a group of people. A majority of, not all of them, but a majority of them so ill-prepared for anything. I mean, you got the East Coast locked up by snow and they're acting like it's never snowed before. You got the West Coast acting like it's never rained before here. It's just astounding to me how few people actually have a memory that goes more than the last episode of Glee. I've never even watched Glee, but I like making fun of it. But it's a sad, sad statement on humanity, isn't it? On Americans' ability to do things. Well, we're here, and as I promised you, we try to do something every day to further your knowledge, extend your abilities, and enlighten and enhance your thought processes. We try to find things that keep you always thinking. I did my first interview today with Shauna Ford over the phone from her behind enemy lines, behind the wire, the political prisoner, Shauna Ford. It was very interesting. I've never received a phone call from someone who's in custody, and it comes up, and they give you like a two-minute preamble of what's going on. It's a recorded message, and you know, you have to accept the charges and do all that kind of stuff. What? It's never supposed to rain in California. Yeah, it pours. So I'm doing a little bit of, well, we're getting the computer set up. I'm doing a little bit of pre-interview with Shauna, very nice lady, you know, finding out what she wants to talk about. I said, okay, let's go. And I started to do an intro, and I said, we're on the phone with political prisoner Shauna Ford, and the phone disconnected. Because they told us that there would be people monitoring the call on her side. they hung it up. They didn't like me saying that. So when she was able to call back, went through all the push one, push this, push that. I was able to get about a 13-minute interview out of her, and we'll do some more tomorrow. And just talking about her views on politics and those types of things. And when we get those, we'll probably play those. If we get her early enough in the morning, we'll play both of them tomorrow for you to get you ready for Monday when Lane Lawless is going to be on and give us more background. They clipped you another $10 for the Connect. Probably. They probably did. Batfag saying that they charge so much for, you know, every time they call, but that's okay. It's worth it to get the information out. And talking to Shauna, we're not going to hear anything new, but I want you to put a voice to the face and hear her humanity and hear that they haven't broken her. Hear the courage in her words. That was the one thing that I really came away with. And so it was very, very, very good interview. My first prison interview that wasn't involving me in being in law enforcement or being an investigator for mental health or something.
They put like $13 credit on
the... Yeah, they put $13 credit, and then she, as she talks, it goes down. So I don't know how that works. It's good to hear her voice after reading about her and stuff like that. So we'll look forward to that. Maybe tomorrow night we'll play that part of the interview. Today I've got something somebody sent me, Lou. Go ahead and minimize that window so I can show you where I want you to play it. I'm kind of surprising you here. We get people that submit stuff here all the time, and this one. And I got this really good, it's a video, and it doesn't really, during the video, what it's like a, I think it's a 9-minute piece, but during the video, it's a pastor from down in Southern California talking about the true meaning of the national anthem. When Francis Key wrote it, what was going on. Now, in the audio portion that you're going to hear coming up here, it's real moving. He kind of screws up his wars a little bit. I don't think he realizes the War of 1812 wasn't the Revolution. And maybe he misspoke, but in a produced video, you think they'd catch that. But it's good to see a mainstream pastor, and I forgot his name. I'll have to look it up again. I apologize, folks. I'll get his name before the end of the show. Maybe I'll look that up while it's playing. But this pastor tells the story of how our national anthem was written. Have you got it ready to go, Lou?
Yeah.
Go ahead and play it, and let's see how the audio is. Listen in.
There was a lawyer once by the name of Francis Scott Key. He wrote a song that I'm sure you are very well aware of. It's called the National Anthem. As Americans, it is our song. However, we go to a ball game and we hear the words of that song. Oftentimes, we don't even realize what's being sung. Most of us have memorized those words from time to time, but we've really never thought about what those words mean. Let me tell you a story. Francis Scott Key was a lawyer living in Baltimore. The colonies were engaged in vicious conflict with the mother country, Britain. Because of this conflict and the protractedness of it, they had accumulated prisoners on both sides. The American colonies had prisoners, and the British had prisoners. And the American government initiated a move. They went to the British and they said, "Let us negotiate for the release of these prisoners." They said, "We want to send a man out to discuss this with you." They were holding the American prisoners in boats about 1,000 yards off the shore. They said, "We want to send a man out to you by the name of Francis Scott Key. He's going to come out and negotiate and see if we can make a mutual exchange." And so on the appointed day, he rowed out in a little boat and went to this ship, and he negotiated with the British officials. And they actually reached a conclusion that these men would be exchanged on a one-for-one basis. Francis Scott Key was jubilant with the fact that he'd been successful. He went down beneath the bottom of those boats, and what he found was a cargo hold full of humanity, full of prisoners, full of men. He said, "Men, I've got some good news for you. Tonight, you're going to be free." He said, "Earlier today, I negotiated successfully your return to the colonies. You're going to be taken out of this boat, out of this filth, out of these chains." And then he went back up on board to arrange for the safe passage to the shore for these prisoners. And the admiral came and he said, "We have a slight problem." The admiral said, "We will still honor our commitment to release these men, but it will be merely academic after tonight. It's not going to matter." And Francis Scott Key said, "What do you mean it's not going to matter?" And the admiral said, "Well, Mr. Key, tonight we have laid an ultimatum upon the colonies. Your people will either capitulate and lay down the colors of that flag that you think so much of, or you see that fort right over there, Fort Henry?" He said, "We're going to remove it from the face of this earth." Francis Scott Key said, "Well, how are you going to do that?" And the admiral said, well, if you'll scan the horizon of the sea, and you could look, you could see hundreds of little dots. He said, that's the entire British war fleet. All of the gunpowder and all of the armor is being called upon to demolish that fort. They will be here within striking distance in a matter of about two and a half hours. Francis Scott Key said, well, the war's going to be over. These men are going to be free anyway. You can't shell that fort. That's a large fort, he said. It's predominantly not a military fort. It's full of women and children. And the admiral said, don't worry about it, he said. We've left them a way out. And Francis Scott Key said, well, what's that? And the admiral said, you see that flag way up there on the rampart? He said, we have told them that if they will lower that flag, that the shelling will stop immediately. And we will know by the lowering of that flag that they surrendered, and you'll now be under British rule. Francis Scott Key went down beneath and told the men what was about to happen. And the men asked, how many ships are there? And he said, there are hundreds of ships. And as the ships got closer, Francis Scott Key, he went back up on deck and he said to the men beneath, he said, I'll shout down to you and I'll tell you what's going on as I watch. As twilight began to fall and as the haze hung over the ocean, suddenly the British war fleet unleashed. Bam, 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 bam. He says the sound was deafening. There were so many guns, there was no relief. He said it was absolutely impossible to talk or to hear. He said suddenly the sky, although dark, was suddenly lit. And he says from down below, all he could hear from the men, the prisoners, were saying, tell us where the flag is. Where's the flag? What have they done with the flag? Is the flag still there? Is the flag still flying over the rampart? Tell us. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours into the shelling. Every time the bombs would explode, it would be close to that flag. They could still see the flag in the illuminated red glare of that bomb. And Francis Scott Key would report to the men down below. He would say, it's still up. The flag's still there. It's not down yet. And eventually the admiral came and he said, your people are insane. What's the matter with them? Don't they understand that this is an impossible situation for them? Key said that he remembered the words of George Washington when George Washington had said that the thing that sets the American Christian apart from all other people in the world is that he will die on his feet fighting before he'll live on his knees. The admiral said, we have now instructed all of the guns to focus on the rampart, to take that flag down. He said, there's something that we don't understand, however. He said, our reconnaissance tells us that that flag has already been hit directly again and again and again, and yet it's still flying. We don't understand that. Now we're about to bring every gun for the next 3 hours to bear down on that point. Francis Scott Key said that the barrage was unmerciful. All that he could hear was the men down below praying the prayer, God, keep that flag flying where we last saw it. Sunrise came, he said. There was a heavy mist hanging over the land. And there stood that flag, shredded, but you could still see the red, white, and blue colors. The flagpole itself was kind of at a crazy angle, but the flag was still flying at the top. And Francis Scott Key, he rowed ashore, and immediately he went inside Fort Henry to see what had happened. And what he had found was that that flagpole and that flag had suffered repetitious direct hits over and over again. And whenever it had been hit, it had fallen. But men and fathers who knew what it meant for that flag to be lying on the ground, although knowing that all of the British guns were trained upon it, would walk over and pick that flagpole up, and they literally held it up humanly until they died. Their bodies would be removed and others would come and take their place and hold that flag in place. Francis Scott Key said that what held that flagpole in place at that unusual angle were the Patriots' bodies. And the song goes like this. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we held at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming. For the rocket's red glare and the bombs bursting in air gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave for the land of the free and the home of the brave? It is my prayer that whenever we see the flag, that we'll always remember that story and we'll always remember the price that was paid.
It's just amazing to me how many people will sing a song and not even recognize the words, the meaning of the words, or where they came from. And something like the national anthem, you know, the Star-Spangled Banner, you know, we've all sung it tons of times. I've been to baseball games. We had to sing it every morning in school. And never once has any history teacher told me that story. I got it last week, and I wanted to check into it a little bit to make sure it was basically true. And that comes from Dudley Rutherford. He's the pastor of the Shepherd of the Hills Church in Porter Ranch, California. Dudley Rutherford, Shepherd of the Hills Church in Porter Ranch. You know, you can go on YouTube and just put the story behind the Star-Spangled Banner and it pops up. It seems like I was talking about how people forget about the calamities that come every year, and then when it snows, they act surprised. America forgets the vicious fighting that went on in two wars to liberate us from Great Britain, the American Revolution, and then a short time later, the War of 1812. They don't realize the brutality that was visited upon our own land by government troops with the backing of magistrates, heads of state, corporations, forcing them. Turn down the speaker all the way, please. I can hear audio. No, that one, the radio station. Forcing their will upon the people, and small numbers took up weapons and decided, we're not going to do this. And throwing off that yoke of tyranny. And then 1812, the second attempt, when they were stealing our ships and impressing our soldiers, our sailors, fighting back again and repelling them again. People don't understand the sacrifices, the history, the price that was paid so that some schmuck like me can do a radio show like this every day and say the things that I say. And as much as our rights have eroded, as much as the rights of Americans have eroded, we still have far more rights than most of the rest of the world. And we don't have those rights because we deserve them, because you and I earned them. We have them because they were given to us by God, taken away, relinquished, surrendered throughout history, and always fought back tooth and nail, blood and bone for, life and limb. And usually the people that pay that price do not benefit from it. Usually the people that pay the price do it sacrificially, knowing that if not me, then my children will live free. When I heard that story, and every time I hear it, it's moving with the music and everything, but the knowledge alone of what happened at that fort motivates me to do a better job every day, motivates me to try and find the key things to motivate you to do what's right every day. And I'm not sure it's getting through to everyone that hears this signal. I know the handful of you that continue to correspond with me, we talk on the phone, I know you're getting it. We will resist. And with the glory of God on our side, we will win. But if we don't, that doesn't mean we shouldn't fight. Right now around the world, in back rooms, expensive hotel, banquet halls, people are deciding the fate of your great-great-great-grandchildren. And without a second thought, they're positioning them for slavery, servitude, to make money for the few, for the elite few. It's happening all over the world. It's going in cycles. It's coming back again. Nothing changes, just the style of the clothing that the tyrants wear, pretty much. In Hungary, this past week, they passed laws saying that if the government doesn't like the news articles, the author of the news articles can be fined thousands of dollars and thrown in prison if the government doesn't like the slant of the news articles. Knee-jerk reaction is like, woohoo, great, we can get rid of CNN and Fox and all those guys. No. Governments should not control the press. That's why I don't like fascism. That's why I don't like the Nazis that like this show. Governments that are there to keep you safe from yourself are tyrants. Governments are put into institutions to protect you from outside evils in a godly manner. That's it. I saw some great quotes today. I was posting them everywhere and getting them. I keep finding stuff on Thomas Jefferson. I know he was a deist, but I still like what he did. And those thoughts are still alive today. And it's, you know, I'm not trying to... People today that I know, the only reason that they're not on the national level and being heard is just because of the way the media works today. They don't get heard. I know people that are as great of thinkers as any of the founding fathers that have a great message of liberty and freedom, but they're just not being heard. I run into them all the time in the Patriot movement. We few, we residue, as it was described to me earlier on the phone, we residue that get it have to be infectious, have to be resilient to keep this message going. This war may not start in my lifetime. I'll be 45 here in a few weeks. There's a little hint for the Southern Poverty Law Center people trying to figure out who I really am. Well, we can bracket his date of birth. We know what the problem is. We've got answers. We've got solutions. And we've got to lose the fear. We've got to lose the negative attitude that it's hopeless, that all is lost. Oh, the technology, they have so much technology. They've got satellites, they've got eyes in the sky, they've got networks of communications we could never defeat. God's going to take care of that. I completely believe that. We're heading for a super solar cycle burst in the next 2 years. They last about 1.5 to 2 years long, when the sun starts to burp and sends out electromagnetic pulses. And guess what that does? That kills satellites. There have already been a couple killed in just the precursors to this. You don't have to be an astrophysicist to find this stuff. Just Google sun activity. It goes in 11-year cycles. Because I'm into communications, I've been following it. That might be the time. God may blind our enemies, literally. That might be the time. And they know that. The enemy knows that. They're going frantic trying to figure out ways to protect their satellites. It's only going to take a few burps of the sun of radiation to take them out. Do you guys remember, since 95, they've had massive communication failures. It's the sun. The sun's a great big electromagnetic nuclear fusion. I can always forget them backwards, but it doesn't matter if you're wearing a tinfoil hat. The sun's going to burp. It's going to burp. We may have to go underground, but the unseen effects will be it'll take out communication, so I don't fear that. I pray for God to do that. Take out everything. Fry every electronic component. In the past, great people have been defeated. Great people have won. But you still got to fight the battle. You still got to try. And when I look at the words of the writings of the Founding Fathers, the Star-Spangled Banner, with more than just a precursory, oh yeah, that's really neat. And you look at the passion in them, you look at why they were written, when they were written, and what was at stake in the hearts and minds of the people that were intended to read them at that time. It's kind of like when you read the Bible, right? Take it in context in that time. Down through the ages, we get these words, we get these symbols, we get these ideals. They haven't changed. I can tell you, if the American Revolution had never occurred, people today would come up with those same concepts because they're written on the heart of man by God. Children know what's fair and what's right. Just expressing ourselves in the proper way that make them works of art is the difference between us and those that are remembered. Keeping the right attitude that we're in this for the long haul. Stop being a typical 30-second attention span American. There's going to be a lot of battles in this thing. We're going to suffer a lot of defeats. A lot of people are going to die in this coming war. This global war of tyrannical aggression. Every country's going to have its own front. Every country's going to have its own way of fighting. I focus on the way it's going to be here, but I try to extrapolate that out so that you folks can learn something from it. That's why we have Steve Klein on, a man who has killed a lot of people for this country, killed a lot of communists, scumminess over in Vietnam, who has the ability to convey those skills to you guys through this microphone or through the phone, whatever. You've got to listen to it. Go back and listen to it if you don't hear the Tuesday night shows. I'm bringing you those not necessarily just because of the anti-Muslim message. I hope you're seeing through that and seeing that it's the tactical cell warfare lesson that needs to be learned. Every time I do one of those shows, oh, the Muslims aren't the ones. We don't have to worry about the Muslims. It's the X, Y, and Z's we got to worry about. I don't care who the enemy of liberty is. I just have to adapt my battle plan to what their battle plan is. Actually, I should have said I have to make them adapt what they're doing to my battle plan. I should set the tempo of the battlefield. And I'm trying to get you guys to learn that kind of stuff. Because the people who are into this now, we're not the foot soldiers. You and I are not foot soldiers. We don't even have enough people to have foot soldiers yet. We're going to be the chiefs. We're going to be the planners, the schemers, the leaders. That's why we do what we do. And I hope you get that. We don't have followers yet. I'm going to be blatantly honest with you. I think we're not going to have a lot of them anyway. People are waking up. People are scared. I mean, like yesterday, I had a handful of people come to me who never shot a weapon before, want to know how to do it. And I bet if I took the time to find out why, I bet at least a couple of them would have said because of what's going on in the world today. I want you guys to think about that. We're going to talk about that for the next half hour. We're going to do the best we can to get through a two-hour show here. I don't know if I can do a whole 2 hours. But I wanted this to be an attitude readjustment show, attitude realignment. Just like you rededicate yourself to Christ, let's rededicate ourselves to the cause tonight. And let's share some of that stuff together in the chat room. We'll be right back after this break. Are you playing music?
Yeah.
I hear something in the background. Bring it up.
Spirit,
we'll be right back.
Lives on in true America. Who answer the call, protect and defend? To life without liberty, so I'll stand for what's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. Every time I hear children say the pledge of allegiance, I'm reminded there's no price too high for freedom. To keep America first, last and forever. We must stand our ground, fighting together.
on my knees. I'm a patriot. Color me red, white, and blue. Hello, patriots. America's counting on you. And I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point in life without liberty. So I'll stand for what's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point to life without liberty. So I'll stand for what's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet and live on my knees.
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
Gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
All for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
I'm waiting. Nothing? We're going to play something.
No.
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 What's the 500 pounds?
500 pounds,
please. To Mr. Bond.
Hand grenades. Mr. Bond.
Lose random sound effects. I love it. Give us another one.
Eight.
No, no, no. A word, not a number.
Because he is Bond. Come to lunch on Sunday.
I forgot the name of that villain. What's the villain's name? Spectre. Yeah, he's from Spectre.
Largo.
Largo?
Do you know much about guns?
Yeah, I know a little bit about guns. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. We're back. I want to remind you guys there will be no show Friday night. No show Friday night. It's New Year's Eve. You guys gotta get a break from me anyway. Stacy wants to get her dance groove on, and we're gonna hold a big old dance party. Lou's learned a new dance. What's the name of the new dance, Lou? Churn the milk and make it butter. Churn the milk and make it butter. Lou's got this really good dance he's doing. I wish we had, I got to videotape it and show you guys. It's hilarious. But we're back. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program, where we bring you a Christian militant worldview with just a slightly twisted sense of humor. I don't think you're going to find a show like this anywhere else. I get people all the time, well, I listened to Mark Kornke already. I'm like, okay. I listened to Alex Jones. Okay. I'm Dutch Jones. I'm completely different. And I try not to repeat what the other people do unless it's important, you know, really good stuff. There's some things you can never, you cannot hit enough, things like that. But what we're talking about today is just staying motivated and finding ways to stay focused and to keep people learning. You know, you can do some of this. The internet's at your disposal. You've got to find materials to share with your close friends. Going out and recruiting cold anymore, I think that's not going to happen. People will come to you. People will seek you out and go, hey, you know, some guys at work will go, hey, I noticed you always got them gun magazines out. Me and my wife want to get a gun. What can you tell me? I'm getting that a lot now. People going, hey, DJ, I remember, you know, from church you were saying this and that. And a lot of them are doing it out of being awoken to the problems or necessarily more likely just the fact that they're feeling the pain. They've been out of work. They realize that the great unwashed zombies from the cities are going to come and try and take their stuff. So more and more people, and they're getting hectic about it. So you've got to find a way to focus that. First thing above all is focus on grounding it in Jesus Christ. Teach them that liberty comes from Jesus Christ, from God alone. That the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, do not grant us anything. They are pieces of paper that outline what God has given us. And what God gives us, no man can take away. They can squash you and stop you from exercising your God-given rights. But the rights can't be taken away. They can't be abolished. Only God could do that if he wanted to. And he may. He may punish us and we may go into captivity. I honestly believe, and this offends a lot of people, that instead of sending us, the real Israel, into captivity, he brought a foreign illegal alien king, Obongo, a Kenyan foreigner, Indonesian foreigner, whatever, wherever you want to believe he was born, but I know he wasn't born in America. And he put us, it was easier to take 360 million people and put a leader over them rather than move us to Babylon. He brought Babylon to us. And we are suffering a judgment. I don't believe Satan's in charge. I think Satan's out there. I think Jesus Christ is sitting at the right hand of God, and he is reigning over this kingdom. So you've got to start there with whatever flavor of attitude that you have there, but put God first. Put Jesus Christ first. Let's not mince words. Jesus Christ. No king but King Jesus. Show them that that's how this country started, and all this garbage out there that we're not a Christian nation has to be countered. Now, I'm not expecting you to go stand up in the mall and do it, at the food court, but do it with those who will listen on your coffee table in the room there. You know, we've got to get more covert. We've got to get more select in who we bring into the fold. Start with Jesus Christ. Then use the survival stuff. Don't scare them outright with all the Marshall stuff. Go survival on them. Do an assessment of their house. You guys that listen to this show, you probably know just as good as I do, if not better. Yes, Lou, set up the camera. Even better, what needs to be done. Do an assessment of them. Don't break them. Make them. Don't break them. Make them. This isn't the Marine Corps. This isn't the Army. You don't want to break their will and show them how stupid they are because they don't have any of their equipment. Go in and find what they have and build on that. This is your Christian duty. Make sure your neighbors got what they need so they don't come knocking on your door. Fellowship with them, discipleship, start a Bible study, start a preparedness club, start a group. Don't worry about names, badges, uniforms, and all that kind of stuff yet. Get to know the person first. Make sure they know how to go poopy in the woods. Make sure they know how to dig a latrine if they have to. Work on the basic stuff first. Work on the basic stuff first, but educate them. Don't come up to them with 40 DVDs on how alien reptiles took down the World Trade Centers. It's too late for that. Find out what their enemy du jour is and work with that. If immigration's their thing, work with that. If crime's their thing, work with that. You know, as long as you're not some totally wacko nut, you know, and is out there and they think that it's alien lizards that are going to come in 2012. I personally don't like to be around that stuff. I think it distracts. It borders on cultic. Cultic, C-U-L-T-I-C, not Celtic, cultic. Be very choosing in who you fellowship with and share this information with. But when you're doing this, guard your family. Don't take them to your home and show them everything you've got. Because the weak-minded and strong-bodied will go, well, Dutch has got all that stuff in his house. Why should I do it? I'll just go over and shoot Dutch when he's out taking a poop in the woods. Because there will be people that you think you trust that will think that way. Maintain operational security. But as you're educating them and feeding their minds and their hearts with good gospel and good history, you'll get to see their character. Only when you see the fruit of their character is good, then you start training them martially. And it can be anything from starting with a baseball bat, fists, firearms, but you've got to gauge them. And keep, while you're doing this martial stuff, don't forget about the spiritual base. Because if they're not good Christian men and women, and you're equipping them to go out and do combat, what have you just done? You're Dr. Frankenstein. You've created potential enemies, and they may go out and do it more. That's why I'm very select in who I'm willing to fellowship with. All you listeners that are neo-fascist, what are the other ones? National socialists, white supremacists. I know you guys are listening because I get your email, and I know you're listening because I see my stuff posted all over these sites. What's the other one? Christian identity guys, to a big extent. I'm not going to train you because in your own doctrines, I see that you're not going to be wholesome in your practices. And I don't mean to be mean or rude about it. I mean to be specific. I'm not trying to infuriate anybody. I know who listens to this show. And I know why they listen to this show. But I don't want to train a bunch of skinheads to go out and be berserkers, because it's called blowback. They'll come back on you. So be wise in who you train and fellowship with. People are going to start asking you, can I store stuff at your facility? Can I store stuff at your house? Be very select in who you let do that. Because they have stuff on your property, they in their minds will think, well, I have a right to go there when a disaster hits. And you don't want to do that. If you've got a retreat somewhere and you're telling Bob and Mary Jane and Billy Joe and Sally, the little girl, that they can come, you make it very clear to them that that invitation is only for those four. This means you four people. Don't tell your neighbors, don't tell two friends, and they tell two friends. If you guys are listening yesterday, that's what happened to my little training class on firearms yesterday. One well-meaning teenage boy told all of his buddies, next thing I know, I go from teaching two people to nine for free. So, but think about that. That's a good example of what's going to happen when the stuff hits the fan. This same young man may invite all of his friends over. They haven't fellowshipped with us. They haven't trained with us. They sure as heck aren't walking the same path I'm walking. So people need to know it. It needs to be made clear to them. We did that here. And other people I know that have invited me in on their survival plans have said clearly into my face, and I respect it, don't bring grandma unless we've agreed upon it. I know that sounds rigid and mean, but we're living in rigid and mean times, folks. It's time to stop being your typical American and being a real American. We're about to get squeezed, ground up, and spit out. And if we're going to survive, we're going to have to be pretty stoic in some of the things we're doing. We are. You're going to have to realize that not everybody's your buddy. And if you've got those kind of idealists in your group, you got to find a way to contain him and put him where he's best serving, maybe in meds or counseling or something. Because we can't make mistakes. We can't make mistakes. We don't have the support of entire militaries, air, sea behind us. When this shooting war starts and we make mistakes as militia guys and survival groups, everybody dies or gets taken captive, even worse. And we get overrun. But if you get everybody thinking in the same direction, pulling in the same direction, you're going to get through this coming battle that's coming down the line. You make yourself an unimportant target, a hard target to find. Building a huge fort with everything on it is going to just do one thing. It's going to rain attention down on you. Between bandits to UN troops, it doesn't matter. So shy away from the gung-ho types, too. I have to put that one out there. The Ricky Rangers, the guy that's had four terms in Iraq, that all he wants to do is talk about blowing people up. As much as you could probably learn from him, too much of a hazard, too much of a burden, too much of a loose cannon would be a good phrase. Thank you, Debbie. You don't want that around. You don't want somebody who wants to fight all the time. You want fighters. You don't want people who are looking for a fight. Do you understand the difference between that, between those two things? You want people who are willing to fight, not people who are looking for a fight. Let them go do their own thing and, you know, and be polite to them and say thanks. Oh, who do we got here? Okay, let me make sure I got the phone turned on. Hello, who's this? This is Dutch Jones.
Hi, it's Lane Lawless.
Hey, thank you for calling in. We're live on the air, just so you know.
Right. I wanted to talk about what you said about operational security. I think that's really interesting.
Go ahead.
Because I've had this, because I'm a woman, I've had kind of an odd experience. Well, maybe it's not too odd for most women with men, but it seems like whenever I meet a patriot man, the first thing he does, takes me over to his home, he opens up his gun safe, and he shows me all his guns.
I know. I see it all the time.
Now, this isn't a problem for me. I enjoy looking at his guns. But when you start talking about things like operational security and whatnot, I think, well, maybe this isn't such a good idea because if I weren't a good person, if I weren't a patriot, then it might be a problem later on.
You are so correct. I run into people all the time. I had a couple... within the first 5 minutes they met me, they handed me a list of every gun they had and asked me which were the good ones. I knew right away it wasn't going to last. It lasted about, what, 9 months, a year, and then I finally made them mad and they left. They kept trying to give me the gun, the combination of their gun safe. I said, I don't want to know it.
Yeah.
Just don't be braggadocious. Don't be stupid. Good point, Lane.
I liked what you were saying the other night, too, on the Missing in Action broadcast about ways to communicate and things like that, about mowing the lawn or ordering a certain meal or whatever. I love that. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. I'm just building on stuff I've learned. I haven't invented anything. I'm just really good at repackaging it and throwing it out there.
You know, actually, I've been thinking about codes and ways to communicate and things like that, because with Shauna Ford in jail, knowing that they look very closely at my mail to her and her mail to me, it certainly would have been helpful if we had developed a code before she went in.
I was thinking that today when I was on the phone with her, you know, if there was something she was trying to convey, because I don't know if you heard, as soon as I said political prisoner, the phone hung up.
Really?
Yeah, she's going to call back tomorrow morning so we can finish it. Yeah, as soon as I said political prisoner, boom, it disconnected, so they were listening.
How long was the call?
13 minutes.
Hey, that's pretty good. You know, you got almost her full 15 minutes, but I was wondering how that would go, because the moment that they know that she's talking to somebody who counts, then they will disconnect you.
Yeah, so, well, what we'll do is tomorrow morning I'll interview her, and then tomorrow night maybe we'll piece it together and play it on the air, and then when we have you on the following Monday, it'll be a nice little bookended package. People can hear her voice, and then when you're telling what they're doing to her, that will give them an opportunity to get angry, I think.
Oh, that's great. I'm happy to hear that. It's a wonder that Sean is actually been able to make so many phone calls out to me, because they know that I'm a troublemaker.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think they know who the troublemakers are, and they're watching us, but, we just got to keep doing what we're doing.
That's right. I'm glad you're doing your show. I like it, and I'm glad you got a chance to talk to her.
Great, great. Well, thank you for calling in and with your comments. I appreciate it.
Happy New Year, Doug.
Happy New Year to you, too. Talk to you later, Lane.
Bye.
Bye. She will be back Monday. That's a little taste for you there. Somebody's asking in the chat room, what about lone wolves? Lone wolf types, I don't think they're going to last very long unless they're super troopers. And even then, lone wolf, I just can't think of a scenario where it's lasted. That's a Hollywood myth. Think of all the lone gunmen that always end up going out in a blaze of glory anyway. So lone wolfing, to me, I understand why they get to that point and why they think that they're going to be a viable player in this until they meet an irresistible force. You know, you can only evade so much, and if there's one of you, you can't take your stuff with you. So you're basically just leaving it behind for others to salvage when you're dead. So I stay away from lone wolves. We've had to kick a few out of the group. We definitely have. because their attitude is just like, and there have been people that are dear to the pastor's heart, very dear. I don't even want to go into it, but it broke his heart because he has people that just say, look, when this thing hits the fan, I'm just grabbing my gear and going up on a hill somewhere. You know, I'm not going to hang around with you guys. You're a bunch of amateurs. That's an ego problem, a self-realization issue, and a problem that they don't really know who they are or where they stand. It's funny. One of the guys I'm thinking of in my head has never even pulled the trigger on a human, and he thinks he's going to be able to do it. And this person wouldn't come to the border. This person wouldn't get involved in anything where he could have been trained, other than he's got lots of training, but he doesn't want to train with us because of his ego. I think it's because he's not as good as he says he is, and people will figure it out. It's just like when I go shooting and people shoot with me and they see how good of a shot Lewis and I are, it intimidates them to a point, so I don't shoot so much anymore. Around others. Well, yeah, if you know me, Debbie says she feels safe. But I mean, like the group yesterday, I didn't shoot until we had an issue where I had to shoot to shoot some deer off the course. So they were unable to hit a target at 100 yards, a steel target. And I just picked up the rifle, bang, hit it, made a noise, scared the deer. And when I do that, some people are like, oh, I don't want to shoot anymore because you're too good. That's the opposite end of the lone wolf thing. I've got to realize that I shouldn't be ashamed of my skills. But you've got to be humble enough to know that you can always use more training. So that's why I don't go the lone wolf route. What are you showing me? An army of one. How's that working for you? Great picture Lou has. Oh, Lou put it in, that tiny URL. It's one, it looks like one police guy hiding behind a shield, and he's about to be taken out. An army of one. How's that working for you? Yeah. I wanted to make some bumper stickers that said a militia of one. Then I thought the State Patrol would be pulling me over and giving me body cavity searches every time I drove down the hill, so I didn't do it. But that's a good question, the lone wolves. Are they a necessary need? Can you harness a lone wolf? Yeah, but I don't know if that would be ethical from a Christian standpoint. But if you've got a guy that says, hey, give me all the gear you got, I'll go live up on that hill for 6 months and radio in every 6 hours, you can put them to use that way. But I wouldn't trust them with detailed stuff. But, you know, or if you've got a known target of high value and you've got a guy who says, I know it's a suicide mission, but I'm willing to go in there and do it, then you let him do it. Interesting. You know, there are no absolutes in this. So when I say always or never, or that, you know, take that with a grain of salt if I misuse those words. That's not exactly what I'm meaning. But yeah, that's the thing to do. And I mean, when you're going to be living in a post-collapse community, not just a militia unit, but a community, the personalities of the people that you let in have to be severely screened. If you've got a control freak, or a rumor monger, or I'm thinking of all the people that we've kicked out in the last year, lazy people, fearful people, definitely get the fearful people out. If you don't think you can work with them, you know, you can always tone somebody down, but it's hard to ignite a fire where there's no kindling. Does that make sense? I mean, am I talking too metaphorically? If you've got somebody that's a complete and total pacifist that wouldn't raise a fist to save their own intestines from being eaten out by a bear, you don't want them around you. They're going to be a burden because people are going to throw themselves to save that person, or they're going to freak out or whine. You've got to find ways of testing people. And you've got to apply some kind of stress, but most civilians don't want to be... They don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to get dirty. Like, one of the best ways to stress somebody out is have live fire training with multiple targets, smoke, people screaming and kicking at them when they're trying to shoot. You know, you do it within safety precautions, but most people, oh, I don't want to do that. It's so loud and ugly. Doing airsoft, doing those kind of things are great, but you don't get the fear, you know, involved. You've got to find ways to stress people out. That's why I like disasters. I look at every natural disaster as an opportunity. And if you go to our Facebook page, a friend from my past reminded me of some pretty crazy stuff I did during some wildfires. I forgot all about them. And I was rescued myself and started rescuing other people out of a wildfire that whipped through a town. And several of us lost everything. But police and fire had abandoned the area and cordoned it off and just said, you know, everybody evacuate. And some people didn't, like me. And we just went through and did what we had to do, saved some structures, rescued some burning babies, you know, the usual stuff. And I had forgotten all about it. But now they're having like a chat about it on Facebook because this guy had found me again. That's the kind of stress that God has put me through to be a better teacher for you folks. The combat I went through in the Army, The situation is, as a police officer and a firefighter, paramedic, the situation as a civilian, the things, the dead bodies I've seen, the beatings I took as a kid, stuff I did in my home, that was done in my home. I know God put me through those to make me a better presenter of what it takes to survive in a hazardous situation. I've been baptized by fire more than once. I know what it's like to have bullets fired at me over my head. I know what it's like to be stabbed. I know what it's like to be hit in the head with rocks, 2x4s, baseball bats, a chain. I think that's it. I know what it's like to lose. I know what it's like to be on the ground and be kicked by 5 or 6 guys and wake up in a hospital with your jaw wired. I've been through bad times. That's why I don't fear what's about to happen. I've lost children. 2 kids. I've had 2 children die under me. With my first wife. It's probably one of the reasons we're divorced. That's a horrible stress to go under. I can handle anything that I can think up. I'm sure God can come up with a few things that I may not be able to handle. I've had my Job moments, and rather than curse God and die, I chose to fight and get through them. We've got to find ways to do that to other people. I have yet to meet anybody that's had a perfect life. I've yet to meet anybody who hasn't had their butt kicked at least once. But a lot of people want to forget that, and a lot of people refuse to learn from it. But those of us that had our butts kicked several times have got to find a way to use that as a great teaching tool to harden the others, to educate the others, to let people know that as bad as it is now, it could be worse, without sounding braggadocious, condescending, or elitist in how we do it. That's the trick. Okay, wifey, I saw your message. Yeah, we're going to try and do another hour. I was going to just do 1 hour, but maybe we'll keep talking about this kind of stuff. I think I'm going to share with you a few things that I didn't want to do, to share with you things that I've been involved in where I've either failed or come out smelling like a rose, but I want to teach you guys. Yeah, Debbie's sitting right next to me, Rocky. I want to teach you guys what, you know, from my experiences, what kind of stresses you're looking at and how you can come out of them without a bad attitude. You know, that's the key. We'll be right back. Are you ready, Lou? We'll be back after the break with Liberty Tree Radio. Remember, the phone number is 559-561-8225, 559-561-8225, and we'll be back after this break on Liberty Tree Radio.
Shall stand. The battle belongs to the Lord. We sing glory and honor, power and strength to the Lord. We sing glory and honor, power and strength to the Lord.
The power of darkness comes in like a flood. The battle belongs to the Lord.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Dutch Jones Radio Program. And if you get nothing else from our show, there should be two things that you learn. One is, you need to work together with other like-minded people. And number two, you need the basic equipment to keep from becoming a refugee. So whether you're looking for a water filter, tactical gear, surplus gear, or just want to look into some new survival equipment, you need to check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. We carry surplus, and we carry new lines from MilSpec and Voodoo Tactical. And if you don't see it on our website, please send us a message and we'll find it for you. So if you're going to need the gear anyway, why not buy it from us? You'll get it for cheaper than you will from the source, and it'll help out the ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So whether you're new or been in this for a while, check out djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk.
Gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
We'll put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention.
The government
is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
Radio Program.
And now for something completely different.
And we're back, or we're here first if you're listening on Liberty Tree Radio. We just tuned in, and we're jumping over. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program. Today is, what is today, Wednesday the 29th? 29th of December 2010. I got to get ready for saying 2011. I just got used to 2010. And we're bringing you the Militant Christian Worldview right here from the little hamlet of Cahuilla in Central California, right outside the front gate to Sequoia National Park. And we're told that the snow level is going down to 1,500 feet tonight. We're at 1,000 foot right here. So we'll be able to, maybe we'll go sledding tomorrow, Lou. He's just looking at me like, what? We're still fighting colds here. Lou's not his usual bright-eyed and bushy-tailedness. But we are here. We're trying to get people motivated. We're trying to get folks ready for what we believe is a coming calamity. Man-made, natural, it doesn't matter what it is. As life narrows, calamity comes, so why not be ready for it? And the last hour we were talking about motivating the minds and hearts of the people that are with you and trying to find maybe a few others. You don't need a huge group to do this. When things get bad, we will coalesce into larger groups when needed. But right now what we need are survival groups, 2 to 3 families that are spiritually aligned, common thinking, common goal-oriented, that can do what I call the Winnebago test. Can you spend 3 days in a Winnebago with them without wanting to, you know, commit an axe murder? 3 days is usually sufficient for me in an isolated area to find out if I can get along with somebody or not. That's why after 3 days I proposed to Stacy. It takes me 3 days to figure out if I, she's not listening. I said it takes about 3 days to see if I can live with somebody. So usually wait, you know, about 3 days before you make some kind of life-changing commitment. What?
I still can't.
That's okay. Her ears are clogged. She can't hear anything right now. Like I said, you can tell my voice sounds like probably horrible, but it's from the cold. We're fighting it. And you hear Lou in the background. I should just turn his mic off because he's just wheezing. And sounds like a sick ox or something down in a bog trying to get out. But that's what we're doing. So we're trying to come up at the end of the last hour. I was trying to convey to you the importance of stressing your people out a little bit in controlled situations to see how they're going to act when the stress is external and you can't turn it off when somebody freaks out. And of course, you know, there's no better way to do it than baptism by fire, but it's kind of hard unless you live in, you know, Compton or someplace like that and you can go down and walk down a street and get shot at, you know, on a regular basis. I don't know how you're going to do that. Usually natural disasters are a great way, so that's why I would say you should prepare for natural disasters to be the rescuers. We residue, I love that, the residue, those of us, those few, that those less than 3% of the population that actually are paying attention and care about what's happening and are preparing for it, are going to have to infect the others at one point if this thing's going to change. I don't like the wallflowers, but eventually the wallflowers are going to peel off and want to come to dance. So that means some of us have to know how to dance before they get here, so we've got to be able to... Yes, we are live. Are we still broadcasting?
Yeah.
Yes, we are live. People are having problems with the signal, I guess. Okay, good. And you've got to do some stuff. During the break, I got a call from Minuteman, and he said that, and the scouts have kind of a little thing that they do that they challenge their scouts to, and they go out and they do these road marches, mountain hikes, things like that. And Peter Hammond also shared that with us. That we're supposed to... is everybody else hearing okay? I got a couple of guys that are saying they can't hear. I don't know what's going on. A little buffering. Thanks, Ed. There's no reason why you can't do this. Peter Hammond takes his kids over there in South Africa, mountain hikes, shooting things. They have a shoot house they use with paintball guns, pellet guns, airsoft, whatever, to try and stress people out, because if you can't see what someone's breaking point is in a controlled situation, do you really want to give them duties that are important later? You know, you can live your whole life with somebody and never see them in a fight to know what they're like. So that's what we have to do that. So some of the things you can come up with is you can have just 2 or 3 day long training exercises with limited gear. Don't let them bring the kitchen sink when they show up. Don't let them roll in a Winnebago and operate out of that. Show up with what you can carry, and you may just say, "Okay, everybody, leave your shelter halves in the parking lot. We're going out for a 3 day hike with no shelter halves." You're going to see real quick who the whiners are, who the complainers are. Well, I didn't want to leave, and then you can deal with it. You can either make them buck up, slap them around a little bit, or you can give them a different duty in your thing. Make sure they always have a shelter half so they don't complain. You can limit people to the amount of rations they're allowed to have. I mean, physical stress is easy to do. You know, you say, we're going to cover 15 miles a day through this hard terrain no matter what. And, you know, what's going to happen, you know? Like what Batfag put in there. If you want stress, come live with this bipolar, angry, alcoholic, soon-to-be ex-wife. Some of you may already have stressors in your life. But those kind of stressors are a distraction. They're not creative stressors. But, yeah, I get your point, Batfag. So, yeah, it's a good point. So you might be able to do that. So it's, you know, come up with stuff that you can do to them. I love the idea of taking people's gear out of their pack and saying, no, you can't carry this. You can stress somebody by putting rocks in their pack. Yeah, that's going to build muscles and endurance. But let's work on their mental capacity, too. Let's work on their spiritual capacity to just be like, okay, I will bear this burden and grin because I know I'm going to be a better person when it's done. And it's very important that you stress out their emotional well-being just as much as you do their physical abilities. You can do the live fire stuff where, you know, the guy that always makes the perfect shots from the bench, you know, sandbags, he's got his shooting jacket on. Tell him he has to shoot standing unsupported with that same weapon. And he has to score as high as he did when he was shooting from the bench with all the really cool gear on. And throw water at them, distract them, blow air horns off on them, use firecrackers, use smoke, use whatever you can to stress them. And you're going to see real quick if this guy's got a good attitude or if he's just going to be annoyed. I remember training with SWAT teams in Riverside City, and there was this one, I'm short, I'm 5'7", this guy was even shorter than me, I don't know how he got to be a cop, so I thought most of them had it, but it's... This guy would lose his temper every time we had a scenario and we didn't play by the rules. And I thought, man, this guy's in a life and death career. Yeah. And his teammates, his other six guys are depending on him. And he whines and complains about everything. If it was a war situation, I'd frag the guy. I wouldn't even want him around me. He'd get people killed. It's easy to get along when you're having a few beers sitting around the campfire and everybody's cordial and polite. Get people dirty, cold, hungry, and then demand that they accomplish the tasks, and you're going to see who breaks or who steps up. take everyone in your group and try to make them a leader. We had a guy who was no longer with us, a young man, physically able to do anything we ask him to. Say, okay, you're the squad leader. You have to go in that house. You have to clear it room by room, find the hostage, kill the terrorists, and come out. What's your plan? How are you going to approach it? What are you going to do? And he's just sat through 4 hours of training. He's done it 5 or 6 times with somebody else in charge. Excellent follower, does exactly what you tell him to do when he's, you know, what his area of security. But when you tell him you're in charge now, he looks like a deer in the headlights. Give your people orders. Then you know that guy's not going to be a leader. Sometimes there's grunts. Sometimes there's, you know, there's leaders. But and you also don't want a guy who's always going to want to be the leader. If you've got some guy's like, okay, I'm going to be in charge, and every time he does something, you know, he's screaming orders and everything, but he doesn't really know what he's doing. I run into those all the time too. But the way you can fix those guys is make them do every task and learn those tasks and perfect those tasks. Then you put them in charge of it. And a leader has to know the limits and abilities of everybody that's underneath them. And you're not going to get that if you don't stress. If you don't stress them out, you're not going to... And the goal is not to drive them out. The goal is to make them better at what they're doing. Fire starting. Great skill. Have everybody start fires. I've seen people get upset, throw the gear on the ground, and stomp away to the parking lot because they couldn't start a fire like everybody else. And they spent no less than 5 minutes trying to start a fire, and they just freak out. Then add water and wind to the scenario and watch how quickly they break. If they break in a parking lot in a training scenario in a national forest, you know, trying to start a fire in a pie pan, and they can't do it, and they get all mad and cranky. And then the same people always say, well, in the real thing, I'd be more tolerant. No. If you're faithful in the small things, you'll be faithful in the big things. If you're unfaithful in the small things, what does that tell you? If you can't handle the small training tasks, and I get the other thing, well, I don't have to take that training. I got that blah, blah, blah 20 years ago. You get somebody who's showing those kind of signs, you need to sit them down and counsel them. You say, look, if you want to be part of this, you show up to the trainings. You know, there are exceptions to the rule. Grandma's dead, can't get a sitter. I understand that for like the overnight stuff. But you have to set a standard that if you miss so many in a row, you're done. We'll reassign you to another task in the group. You know, you're not going to be able to play with the boys with the airsoft anymore. We had people that whenever it was foul weather, they'd call off for trainings. And we'd go up in like 2 and 3 day deep snow trainings up in the Big Bear Mountains. Deep snow here is like 3 feet, not like real snow, Colorado. But, well, down in Big Bear where I was, this is during the drought in the 90s. And they, oh, my transmission went, I can't make it. And it's like, well, didn't that happen the last time we had rain, the last time we had snow, the last time it was 120 degrees and we went out to the desert? People are going to do what they're going to do consistently. You just got to come up with parameters to try and test them. It's better to find out now that they puke when they see blood than later when you need them to be patching holes in people, right? So come up with training ideas, rigid training ideas, rigid training requirements for your group. Now's the time to get a past, you know, just a bunch of good old boys sitting around the camp going, hey, do you see how many bullseyes I got? That's all fun and well. Now's the time to start tightening things up. We've got to get more serious about what we're doing. I know I'm preaching to the choir. A lot of good people here on Liberty Tree Radio, you know far more than I do about it. And then on our regular network, there are people that are just getting involved in it. So I'm trying to find a middle of the playing field to demonstrate this. Not everybody's a born leader, as Minuteman's saying in there. Not everybody's a born medic. Not everybody's a marksman. Not everybody's a fighter. I actually think I'm one of those guys that I'm not a fighter, and I'm not a leader. But I chose those roles to stress myself out. I don't enjoy those things. I don't enjoy fighting. I don't enjoy all things martial. But I practice them because I know that I need to as a Christian man.
Fighting hurts.
Fighting hurts, Debbie says. Yeah. What I really like doing is training. Training and educating and empowering people to protect themselves and their families. That's my gift. But that doesn't mean I ignore those other skills. Because even the people in the rear, you've got people that say, well, we're just going to be cooks. We're just going to be nurses. We're just going to be latrine diggers. Okay, fine, but you still need to learn how to use a weapon. You know, and I get tired of hearing that, oh, guns just scare me, you know, I'll just call 911, and they apply that to the next level, which is civil unrest. oh, I just won't be here. Oh, I'll just ignore it. And what are you looking at? Oh. And no. To be ignorant and think that the bad times that came in grandma's age aren't going to come today is Pollyannish and childish. And I guarantee you, the mass graves are going to be huge this time around. One, there's more of us, 360 million in America. More of us are fat, stupid, and happy. And the slaughter's going to make Bosnia look like nothing. It's going to make Kampuchea look like nothing. I honestly believe it's going to make the so-called Holocaust look like nothing when the New World Order starts doing what it wants to do. They're going to have more trouble figuring out what to do with the bodies than they are dealing with us. They're going to be up to their armpits in dead pigs, cows, and sheep. And I mean human beings that I label as that. Maybe they'll have to turn to cannibalism. I don't know. They'll keep the ones for their work camps. They'll keep the ones that are useful idiots, as the scumminess say. But the rest are just going to be fodder. And my love of humanity is I want there to be a lot less fodder than there would be today if they struck. So I try to educate people. But they have to have an open mind. They have to have a willing heart. And they have to be humble, or they're not going to receive what you're giving them. So the phone number is 559-561-8225. 559-561-8225. I'm looking for your training ideas, ways to stress people out to see how they're going to react when the stuff really starts. We've already covered, you know, loud and obnoxious training, removing their gear, physical stressors, things like that. But what ideas do you have? I always like the idea of training people, getting them really so they can function with a weapon. They're really good with that weapon, and then take that weapon away and give them something they've never seen before. And just tell them they have to accomplish the same task, the same amount of rounds, center mass, and the same amount of time with a weapon they've never fired. Or here's a good one for you we used to do, and you can make it fun or you can make it stressful. Two-man driving teams. We would do this in our Suzuki Samurais. We'd take the doors off. We, in the desert, would have a series of obstacles that'll roll your vehicle over, that will destroy your vehicle, could hurt people inside if we didn't take certain safety precautions. You blindfold the driver, and you put the passenger in, and he has to tell the other person how to get through the obstacle, what gear to be in, what rock to drive over, what speed to go, where to turn left, where to turn right. And you're probably thinking, this is insane, but let me tell you something. We spent the whole morning trying to do it. We practiced it in the parking lot with orange cones. Once they perfected that, we took them out to Johnson Valley to a little place called Sledgehammer. And we started testing to see how far people could get up the Sledgehammer Trail. Those of you that are off-roaders know about those trails. They're some of the worst trails in the nation. I've seen vehicles just roll 100 yards down those things. Well, we take a stretch of it, an obstacle, blindfold the driver, and see how they can work together to communicate. They start doing it verbally. They start communicating, and they accomplish it. They get over, you know, you give them some winnable things. You give them some Kobayashi Marus where they can't win. And they say, okay, you can't use words anymore. You have to use touch to communicate to get over this log or through these cones. I tell you right now, husbands and wives started screaming at each other after about 2 minutes doing this. So we had to break up the married couples and team them up with other people because the courtesies go out the window when you're married to them. You see right away how raw people are going to get when they fail at this obstacle. And we had people tip over. I know I couldn't do it with my ex-wife. I couldn't get her to drive, for one. She refused to drive. And two, she kept forgetting her left from right, fast from slow. And she just, you know, we tipped over. None was hurt. Put a nice dent in my Samurai. And it, I just, every time I saw it, I remembered that she's not fit to give anybody instructions. So then I got somebody else's spouse in there, and we did it fine. And then we teamed up different guys driving other people's vehicles. We all had Suzuki Samurais in our militia. It was one of the things we uniformed. So great way of doing that. And you can do that not necessarily driving. I know we're kind of crazy and hardcore, but we considered ourselves mounted scouts for what we were doing. Those little Suzukis would go anywhere. You can do it on foot. You can navigate through a house. You know, and try and get people through to obstacles and things. It will build stress. Plus, it builds esprit de corps, and you start timing it. People start trying to do it better. You see people make mistakes, try to do it too fast. People are too cautious, go too slow. You sit them down at the end of the night, and like Scott was telling me during the call there, you do what he called thorns and roses. Thorns and roses. You debrief everything you do. Training has no value if you just train and then go home. You've got to debrief. You've got to do things that make it valuable, that make it, I mean, you got to digest it. Well, what'd you do good? What'd you do bad? And then as the trainer, you have to let them debrief you and critique you. And then sometimes they, when you're doing that, like I did a training up here where we had six teams of people, 3 to 5 people per team. I gave a team leader a radio and a map of the area, and they had to find it was certain objects and a lost boy in the hillside. There were certain things that they had to report and discuss and things like that. And at the end of the debriefing, went over it, and then I asked them for feedback on me, and they're like, well, we didn't like how you only gave one guy a map and one guy a radio. And I said, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was training by design. That was so that you were willing to work with limited resources. And I also rotated the leaders. What? Oh. And we tried to make it so that I could, you know, make things better. And there's some things they said that, you know, hey, yeah, you're right, that would make the training better. But then when they saw why I was stressing them out, why I only gave them one map, why the maps were a little off, you never get the right intel, ever. You just don't. You know, I tell them, oh, you're looking for two people, one is this, one is that, and one of them, they didn't exist. Well, that's what happens sometimes. Things like that. So there are ways to exercise the mind and the spirit of people, as well as having fun in it, too. Let's see what we got here. Are you sure?
Yeah.
This is the Dutch Jones radio program. You're live.
I'm sorry.
Oh, wrong number? Okay, wrong number. I like that. Warland's asking, what about training with mountain bikes? I love bikes. Man, I know that during the Hutari thing, I heard rumors of mountain bikes with motors on them were being used for reconning. I think training with mountain bikes would be great. I miss mountain bikes. I used to ride mountain bikes everywhere. It was kind of like my wheelchair for a while. I could ride a bike, but I had trouble walking after a surgery that I had. Now I try to get on a mountain bike, and it's just nothing but pain, and I miss it. Mountain bikes would be a great, great training tool. Set goals for distances. Set specific day rides. See who shows up. See who sticks with it. Commitment is sometimes more important than ability. You know, if somebody's committed and just keeps trying and keeps trying and keeps trying and shows up to every training, at least you know they're committed to the cause. But if you've got some guy, sure, he can carry a 100-pound pack and ride, you know, 50 miles in a day, but he only comes out when he wants to, and he's late every time, and he's got an attitude. You're not going to discover that unless you have structured, goal-oriented, repetitive training. You want a challenge. You don't want to destroy. I would love to have a ropes course here. That was one of the best team-building things I ever did in the military, were ropes courses, rappelling, climbing, zip lines, nets, competitions through obstacle courses, getting a wounded guy through the ropes course. You know, things like that. You've got to look for ways with whatever resources you have, optimize them. You know, just going out and punching holes in paper and playing force-on-force airsoft, yeah, that's a good start. You're not building anything there, though. You're just reinforcing basic skills. Warland says when he comes down, he's going to bring his bike. There's all kinds of places to mountain bike around here. I don't know about off-road trails. I know, but the roads are just incredible. I try not to ride a bike around here because everything's downhill and I wouldn't get home. I'd be Stacy, I'm at the reservoir. Come and get me. I can't pedal uphill. But do that. Bring a mountain bike. Bring a mountain bike. Put a little risk involved while still staying safe with your training. If you know you got people that are afraid of heights, reach the limit. You know, find some way to get up high and do training. I hate heights, but I enjoyed the rope course. And trying to make decisions while you're actually dealing with a phobia, you'll get to see who rises above and who doesn't. Darkness. I had talked about blindfolding people, but do operations in complete darkness. Everybody's like, oh, I got night vision. I got nods. I got this. I got that. Good. Leave it home today. This weekend, no night vision. We're going to do night operations without night vision. We're going to try and figure out ways to do it. We're going to teach you how to grab your buddy's belt in front of you and stay tight on him and move slowly through the brush at night, not being able to see until the moon decides to come out or something. Take away the crutches. Take away the pacifiers. Take away the soothing foods that they bring along. Say, okay, everybody has to bring MREs. You know, no Twinkies, nothing. Just make do with what you got. And tell them, you know, okay, how many did you bring? Well, I bought 4 a day, so I got 12. Okay, you're only allowed to bring 3. We're going on a 3-day hike, and you can only bring 3 MREs. And the people that complain, you know, they're not team players. Because in reality, what's going to happen when food's scarce? You're a guerrilla. What's one of the key things in every major operation throughout history? An army travels on its stomach, and food is always scarce. Every single war I've studied, there's not been one time when the soldiers were getting fat because there was a plentiful supply of food. Famine goes with war. It's one of the writers. So teach your men and women to get lean now before it's too late. You know, I'm a fatty. I know it. You guys have seen pictures of me. I know I'm a burden on my teams up here. Every day I'm trying to think of ways to lose weight. When I do stuff, I think about, well, what could I survive on in one day? I have had 2 pieces of toast, a slice of ham, you know, and water for a whole day sometimes, trying to see how it makes me feel. Get to know your limits. Now, I know if you're hyperglycemic, diabetic, whatever those things, you got to deal with those. You know, I have to bear my burdens too. But see how long you can go on a really lean amount of fuel. Water. I'm one of those guys, I bring like 16 canteens everywhere I go. The majority of the weight for me is not ammo. It's probably close, ammo and water. I love water. Tell people to start utilizing their water. I mean, you don't get stupid and risk people's lives, but you try and get people down to what they really need, not what they think they need. Sleeping bags. Guys, that got to, you know, you go out on a cold hike and everybody's like, well, I got to bring my extreme cold weather sleeping system. No, say poncho liner. Make a shelter. Those of you that live in the mountain areas or where it's cold, train hard in the cold. Train hard in the cold. Take advantage of the terrain and the weather. Let it be your ally. If they're going to be using UN or NATO troops against us or Chinese troops, pray that they come from warm climates and they won't be able to fight effectively in those climates. Exploit the hardships that God has given you in your battle area. But you've got to be ready for it. We're going to be back after this break. Remember, if you like what you're hearing here, go to DutchJones.info, DutchJones.info. Make a donation at the pitch-in. Here it is. We've been gone 10, 15 days without a donation, and we need to pay power bills here. It may not be a show because they will turn the power off on us if we don't pay it. We'll be back after the break with a little more on this and hopefully your calls.
His foes he does defy. He is the darling of my heart, my southern soldier boy. If in battle he was slain, I'm sure that I should die. But I'm sure he'll come again and cheer my soon he falls in this
stress conditions, the human body will die after 3 days without water. Having access to clean, drinkable water in a disaster, survival situation, or military action is critical when putting together your survival plan and survival kit. Whether you choose to boil, filter, purify, or use some type of chemical treatment, something must be done when planning your survival, escape routes, and plans, and putting together your bug-out bag or simply your rucksack. That's why I have chosen to offer Sawyer brand water filters. These filters used in the medical industry for kidney dialysis exceed the needs for water purification. With different units available, the basic unit that you should get will be capable of filtering up to 500 gallons a day and will not need to be replaced until you have surpassed 1 million gallons through that filter. I know that's hard to believe, but it's a fact. They've been using these filters overseas for years in the missionary fields and in post-disaster recovery efforts. The filters are lightweight and simple to use, so whether you attach it to a 5-gallon bucket, to a water bladder, or to a 10,000-gallon tank, these filters can do the job for you. They can handle up to 40 PSI, and with different fittings and ingenuity, you can even apply them to inside, inline water supply systems into your house, cabin, or survival structure. So I'm asking you to go to djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer water filters. Order them through us. You will save at least $5 off the retail price of buying them from Sawyer Direct. And as always, the money goes to help the radio ministry here at the Dutch Jones Radio Program. So, do something right for your family, get them prepared for a disaster or calamity, and you're helping us out. So don't forget, djstore.tk. That's djstore.tk. Check out the Sawyer brand water filters.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points, bullet. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention.
The government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
And we're back. This is the final half hour of today's episode of the Dutch Jones Experience. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking about stressing your people now so you don't get surprised later, and different training doctrines, training exercises, paradigms you can instill in them, philosophies, things like that. Thank you, Ed. Ed just put $5 in the chip in. I appreciate that. I really appreciate that, Ed, especially since you're giving us the airtime here on Liberty Tree Radio. I really appreciate that. You didn't have to do that, so thank you very much and bless you for that. Now, one of the things that lacks in militias today, not all of them, but the ones I've seen, is combined skills training. Everybody wants to compartmentalize it. Oh, this Saturday we're doing NBC. Next Saturday we're going to do marksmanship. Saturday after that we're going to do medical. You have to combine these skills together because on the battlefield, on the street, during a wildfire, it's not going to be one skill set at a time. It might be the ultimate in multitasking. One of my favorite things is that everybody wants to talk NBC, chemical agents, all that stuff. Everybody's got chem suits, everybody's got masks, but nobody wants to train with them on. It's miserable, it's nasty. I hated it in the Army, but every 6 months, we MPs had to don full MOP gear, I don't know what they call it now, but MOP 4, our protective masks, and do military police duties. We didn't just go, ooh, great, my mask fits, we'll go in the gas chamber, throw a tear gas grenade down, ooh, look how cool we are, okay, 10 minutes later, everybody's done. No. We would do multi-skill testing, processing enemy prisoners of war, EPWs, in full MOP gear, applying field medical skills in full MOP gear, doing room clearing in full MOP gear. That will really stress people out. The heat, especially if you do it in the hot, you'll be able to see people will start making dumb mistakes and stupid fumbling things. Their mind will start focusing on the mask and forget about target acquisition, all kinds of things. if your guys or your people are equipped, even with just protective masks, you don't have to have full mop gear, just out of nowhere, and because you should have a doctrine that when we're doing a militia training, you bring all your gear with you. I hate this, like, well, what gear should I bring this weekend? Bring everything you got. No, seriously, what gear should I bring? Are we going to be focusing on water purification? I'll just bring my canteens and my LBE. Every time you show up here, you should have a three-day ready kit on. That's our philosophy here. It should be in your car. So if I say get your protective mask, you know, if that were the you should have it. And you've got to be able to stress people out with that alone. If somebody screws up, make a point of it. We used to have a sergeant-at-arms that would fine people for not having gear. Had a coffee can, and walk around, and they'd have to thump quarters in there for every piece of gear that they didn't have. We'd have random shakedowns. Scotty's saying it sounds like some of the firefighting training. I'm combining, it's what I'm doing here. My world experience is U.S. Army, civilian police, civilian fire, disaster preparedness. You're right, Scotty, I'm combining it all together. You've got to be able to function with all this gear. I love these people that go, well, I don't want to shoot with my vest on because it's uncomfortable. Then why are you bringing a tactical vest into a combat situation? Do you think you're only going to be shooting from a kneeling position behind a dumpster every single time? Oh, I can't go prone because I got my radio attached. I actually heard that in a training we just had. My radio's on the front. I can't go prone. Well, then you're dead. Because you can't go prone, somebody's going to get shot in the head, you're going to be the link taken out of the chain, and the rest of the chain's going to snap because you put your radio in a place where it can get smashed. Oh, I can't get to my magazines, you know, because I can only shoot from this position or that position. One of the greatest things to do, I love doing this to people, is I'll walk up and I'll say, okay, you just got hit in the right arm, you fell down, you got glass in it, you can't use it. For the next three cycles of shooting, you have to shoot left-handed. Oh, people hate that. No, you don't have a right arm anymore. A zombie just gnawed off your right arm. You've got a left arm. What are you going to do? It makes them so uncomfortable, and they can't handle it because now they can't get those nice, tight groups. They can't sit around and brag about how good they are. No, bad fag, I've never been a superhero that I know of. I think the closest I would be would probably be Flatulence Man, but I heard that was already taken, so I can't do that. Another way to stress people out, one of the ways I really, and I don't think I've done it here yet, park their car on the shooting range, put targets behind it, and make them take targets out without hitting their car. Our car got shot doing that, huh, Stace? Some guy shot the radiator. But so that's why I changed the rule to we put your car on there. Have them get out of the car. Yeah, you shoot your own car. Stacy was still mad about that. Somebody took out my radiator. But brand new radiator, too. Put them in the car, seat belted in, and that's the starting position. Now, though, I don't do that right out. I start with chairs on the shooting range, put chairs four positions. Okay, you have to stand up, move around the back of the chairs, get the movement in their mind, but then eventually you make them shoot around and over their own cars. They start thinking real carefully about shot placements. One of the smaller, lesser thing for our hostage targets, we make them write the name of a loved one on the hostage. Lewis just keeps putting Twinkies. He writes Twinkie on it. I guess he's trying to save. Who's Twinkie? Or is it actually the food Twinkie you want to save?
Twinkie the Kid.
Twinkie the Kid? Oh, that's right. The little cowboy dude. So you've got to make it as realistic and as stressful as possible. Show people the results of their actions. Sometimes I think I make people mad because I go drill sergeant on them. Now, I've never been a drill sergeant, but I've been on the other end of it. I want people to go, oh, that guy's like, you know, he's serious about this. You know, like, you realize what you just did? You didn't follow your duties as rear guard, didn't cover your area. Now everyone is dead because of what you did. How does that make you feel? And the guy's like, Minuteman saying, that's why on our last training I wore my full field pack because that's what I would have on an operation. It depends on the operation too, Minuteman. You don't want to have, like, if it's just a day patrol and you're going to go out with just your TA-50, you don't want to overdo it. So you don't want to have, like, a full-on pack on if you're just going to be... So make sure that they know what the requirement is, but have that gear in the car. So good point.
Minuteman was wearing his pack when we were doing the peel-offs. He'd spin and take Lewis out with his pack. I remember that. Bam! So, yeah, make it fit mission-critical gear. Mission-critical gear. So, good point, Minuteman. So, I don't know. I mean, are you guys picking up what I'm putting down? I mean, are you guys training like this, or are we isolated up here? I like to think the rest of the militia world's training like this and realistic. We don't go out and drain the shooting range after it rains. We lay down in there. We get down in. Okay, Ed's saying he always has a full-on pack. You never know what's going to happen even on a day patrol. Well, in actual missions, I went in Central America. Sometimes we left the packs behind. We loaded the food into our cargo pockets. We did whatever we did, just because stealth it was required and speed, depending on the missions. But yeah, and you're right, Ed. They'll say, oh, it's just a one-day patrol. It always ended up being three. So even when you had the full pack, oh, it's a three-day patrol, bring your packs. It ended up being a seven-day patrol. It always happened. You know, it's just the way it works. But there are some times when you got to be a ninja and you just go in your underwear. But you got to be specific to the operation. Because I've seen guys with great big packs slow everybody down. I've seen guys with great big packs snag on everything when the mission required that, yeah, I'll be a little hungry, but and I might be cold at night, but nobody's going to hear me. So in real world deployment stuff, yeah, I'd love to bring the kitchen sink with me everywhere I go, but it's not always optimal. But when you're coming to training, you better have all your gear because you better be ready for any kind of training because you never know what it's going to do. I love I was talking about the shooting range. We got a spring right behind our targets, and it floods. It just floods the shooting range every spring. Water comes out. And, you know, we put a little bit of decomposed granite down there, but we'll tell people, okay, shoot from prone. And you'll see four or five guys just drop right to prone. The rest are like, ew, it's gonna be wet and muddy. I file that away in my head saying, these guys don't want to get dirty. We've got a really nice couple people that have really nice gear. Really good 5'11 type gear, all that stuff. Look like they're, you know, going to go on the safari cruise. Great, great people. But they don't want to get dirty. I want people that are going to get dirty. It's like I always wear olive drab. People go, why don't you have camouflage? I go, after 2 minutes of me rolling around in the cow pies out in the field, I'm going to look camouflaged. Don't worry about me. That's the other thing. You walk them through a field that has had cows in it and watch how many of them get prissy and how long they take to get down. I guarantee you, somebody's shooting at me, I don't care if I drop into a Hispanic typhoid cesspool in Mexico City. I got to keep my head down. I'm keeping my head down. Until you've had real bullets go over your head, you don't know how willing you are to lay in feces. Stress them out now. You'll save their lives later. Stress them out now. You'll save their lives later. You know, you always see those movies where the one guy cracks up and he's screaming and gives away the position and they have to shoot him or smother him or something. You don't want that scenario. I never saw it happen in the real world, but I assume it can happen. If somebody can thunk it up, it's probably happened. It's probably happened. Live fire exercises in the militia? People shooting over your heads while you're going under the barbed wire and stuff? I don't know how practical that is. I don't know if you want to risk it. Word gets out you're doing that, people are going to freak out. But I'll tell you what, I've put people in fighting positions 100 yards away, told them to keep their head down, and I fired 50 cals 2 feet above their heads into targets behind them. It's the closest I came to a compromise in training civilians. You know, we had to do the whole thing in the military. We did the low crawl, and they fired 60s over your head, and they all tell you the story about the one idiot who stood up and got his face blown off. Don't know if it's true. They lie to you a lot in training. Try and mold your mind. But I've had, you wouldn't believe how many people say, what's it sound like to have a bullet go over your head? I go, haven't you ever been to L.A.? I've been in the parking lot of my fire station when I was younger and hadn't been shot at in Riverside County. It's funny because I hit the ground immediately. Phew, phew, over my head. Everybody else is looking around. I'm hearing it chinking off the fence. They didn't know what it was because I'd never been exposed to it. Ed's asking me, do I hunt? Yes, we hunt. We hunt all the time. I've hunted all my life. Good practical application of hunting. Usually the deer don't shoot back, though. But being prepared for a hunt is about the same. You're completely in the offense unless you're hunting some kind of dangerous game, mountain lion, that kind of stuff. So that's a good way to stress people out if that's your point, Ed. I like that. So hunting's a good thing. Let's see, what's he saying here? In Michigan, people go out in the woods hunting and don't even think twice about all the people around them hunting. Oh, yeah. Good point. So many, we used to have problems in Colorado. The Texans would come up and hunt, and they'd shoot people. They'd shoot cows. The ranchers during hunting season for the Texans would write spray paint cow on their animals or a horse on their horses. Live fire training is just like going hunting in Michigan. Oh, man. Yeah, I could see that scenario. Especially I heard there's Hmong or something up there that shoot at people. Was that Michigan where that one guy shot everybody up? Got up in a tree stand and refused to give it up. I think that was Michigan a few years ago. But yeah, hunting in California is that way. I know dove hunting. I took fire dove hunting in Southern California in Imperial Valley. And this isn't a racist statement, but every time I got peppered, it was by Mexicans. Maybe they knew. They knew I was a Minuteman. They couldn't tell. But you'd be out in a field and you pass shoot dove, is that, you know, you try and scare them up or they're flying over, and you get peppered with number 7 or number 8 shot. You'd be like, hey! You look over and like, hey, sorry, vato! No, I'm not kidding about people painting cows, bat fag, in Colorado, because the Texans kept shooting people. There was a mother of two that was shot in the face by a Texan. She had white gloves on and was hanging up her wash on the clothesline. And he thought, this is what this idiot from Texas said, he was from Amarillo. He goes, I thought it was two deer running away, so I just took a shot. Two things wrong. You identify your target, because he saw the two whitetails. And number two, why would you shoot at a deer going away not knowing what it is? You don't butt shoot deer. I mean, it just showed the total stupidity of this hunter. I don't remember what he got, but he killed a woman with like a 270, shot her right in the face. So yeah, hunting, depending on where you're hunting, could be good live fire training. I know going down duck hunting on the Salton Sea, you get peppered. But picking out number 7 and number 8 shot out of your back is a little different than getting all kinds of stuff going on. Last year, we had this little Korean guy shot 5 cows and claimed he didn't know the difference between a cow and a deer. Ed said that. Yeah. And these are the people we're going to be supposedly having to deal with and wade through. Because, you know, I think it was, I was told that Mark Kornke was going over the numbers of gun owners in America, and everybody gets excited about that. You know, there's like a 900-to-1 ratio on police or something. But you got to realize, not everybody that owns a gun is intelligent. Not everybody that owns a gun is trained. Not everybody who has a gun would I want standing next to me. In fact, I've had more trouble from gun owners being idiots than non-gun owners attacking me for having a gun. Does that make sense? I've had people point weapons at my son, my wife, me. Somebody's phone's ringing. Is that me? Well, and it always astounds me that somebody, you know, and it's a type thing, it's like, I don't want to say there should be a minimum IQ test for a guy to have a gun. There should be a minimum IQ test for a guy to have a gun in front of other people, let's put it that way. I don't want some people around me even on a range until I've checked them out, period. Make sure they know what they're doing. Would you let somebody wait, you know, come into your house with a chainsaw if they didn't know how to use it? No. But the good news is, those idiots that have guns, hopefully we can get to them before the bad guys get to them and take them away from them. You hear what I'm saying? Coupon guns. So I'm hoping most of them don't come my way. There'll be a certain attrition going on in civil disturbance. And that kind of thing. That's why, like yesterday, I was willing to teach that impromptu safety class. I had 9 people there, and I could have sent them away from the shooting range. Said, no, this isn't what I got into. You know, what I was supposed to train 2 people, of those of you that listened yesterday. But I said, maybe these people have never even had a single training class. Everything they learned from rap videos and drunken family members. So that now's my chance to give them 2 hours of firearm safety and see where it goes. I pray that I never have to shoot one of them. I don't want to do that. I'd hate to see one of those guys, you know, coming at me with a gun because I gave him 2 hours of training. But there's the reality of that. I've taught hunter safety classes. I've taught all kinds of other things. I won't train with someone who can't even understand trigger discipline, Ed says. Yeah. If people can't go to the ready position, take their finger off the trigger, if people can't keep from muzzling me, somebody does it once, I smile and say, hey, don't do that again. They do it twice, I grab the weapon. I've done. I can't even tell you how many times I've done it. I've been a range master. I've been an instructor for years. I've taken guns away from people with violent force when they keep sweeping me. And they get all mad. They say they're going to call the cops. Say, go ahead. I'll tell them you pointed a gun at me, and I took it away from you. I unload their weapon. Sometimes I've disassembled them and handed them back to them. If I know if they're like a 1911 or something, or, yeah, I'll disassemble it and hand it back to them. You know, you've got to start basic. Ed's bringing up some good points. You start them out with muzzle and trigger discipline. You've got to tell them, every gun is loaded. Don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to kill something. Don't point it at anything you don't mean to destroy. Be aware of your target and everything in front of and beyond your target. You own every single bullet that comes out of that gun. With the right of firearm and weapon ownership comes huge responsibility. Huge responsibility. And some of the worst people for that are ex-military. Their comfort level with a gun is just pathetic. And I can't speak for the current crop. I haven't met any of them on the range coming back. But when I was in, I used to love it when the range cadre would just tackle people for doing stupid stuff. Guys that would turn around and point the muzzle right at the instructor. Next thing you know, there's a boot to the face. The guy slumped down in his little fighting position. I love that kind of stuff. That's why I kind of hit those kids hard yesterday. I said, you do anything stupid on my range today, I will shoot you. You point a weapon at me, I will shoot you. No qualms about it. You know, if you're having suicidal tendencies and you think you're going to take a few with you, not going to happen today because I will shoot you in the face before you get the second round off. So, just the way it goes. Stacy wants to get all this talking about dangerous stuff. You still want to go shoot? Stacy wants to shoot some tomorrow. It was raining today, so we couldn't get out, so we'll try tomorrow. But, yeah, without knowledge and discipline, there's no point in training anybody. I don't want an army of idiots that I can't trust behind me. That's why a lot of leaders don't lead from the front, because they know their people aren't worth it and can't be trusted. I'm always amazed at the amount of misfires and training accidents that happen in America's law enforcement community. The people that claim to be the front line in terrorism, you know, the war on terrorism and all this, and even they shoot each other in the butts and kill each other in training, it amazes me. So, and it's such a simple thing. And if it's everybody's responsibility. Training is everybody's responsibility. Safety is everybody's responsibility. Yeah. So you got to start out with a certain level of knowledge and take them from there. But if they are unteachable, I don't want anything to do with them. I've literally had people come up here that I'm like, I don't want them near me with a gun. We have told certain people, we're an open carry community, we're an open carry church, but not for you. You want to play with us, keep your gun in your car. You've done too many stupid things, and we don't want to see anybody get shot. If somebody wants to go out and shoot beer cans by themselves and hurt themselves, fine, I don't care. But when it comes to hurting innocent bystanders, and the other thing is, the message that it sends out to the rest of the world, oh, look, another stupid gun owner, oh, let's ban guns. Because people haven't taken the time to learn the right way to do it. And I don't understand it. What is it that's different about guns and a chainsaw? Well, in Hollywood, they don't show too many people defending themselves or playing with chainsaws. That might be it. Would you go buy a chainsaw, not read the manual, and just start cutting down trees? Yeah, people do that. But there's so many people that just buy a gun and don't even take the time to learn about it. The process should be you should learn how to use a gun, then buy a gun. There are so many places in America where you can go rent a gun, get good training, and then figure out which weapon is good for you. People usually over-purchase. I can't tell you the number of people that buy the biggest gun they can get, and then they come out here, and then they can't shoot it. They go get a 12-gauge pump shotgun, and they're a tiny little person that can't even work the action. You know, I tell everybody, start small, build on that. Start with a Ruger 10/22 or a 22 pistol if you've never shot before. And even some, I say, start with a pellet gun. And then some, like Lou says, start with a wooden gun, right, Lou? Some people should just...
Says that too.
Yeah, who?
Larry Wick says,
start with a wooden gun. Start them small.
And go to a score.
And Larry Wick trains with live fire. Yeah. When you get to a certain level, he'll train with live fire. Actually have you try and shoot him while he takes the gun away. Crazy, crazy stuff. Good way to teach people what it feels like. If you've never fired a firearm in a house or in a confined space like a car... That might be a good way to stress somebody out. You know, I'm not saying shoot out their windshield, although that is a tactic that I've been taught. Rather than leaning out the window, you shoot through the glass at the aggressor. But have them pull the car up on the range and shoot from inside the car to show what the pressures are like, what the sound's like. How hard is it to get your holster safely out with your seatbelt on? Show them how to get their seatbelt off. Take your people to the next level, folks. Don't just show up, get all, you know, self-indulgent and self-aggrandizing and say, look how great, look at our paper targets. Ooh, look, we shot 10,000 rounds today and everybody got good groupings. Stress them out. Make them get in the dirt. Hit them with a garden hose. I don't mean actually hit them with a garden hose. You can do that too, but spray them with a garden hose. Throw water on them while they're shooting. I've heard great training scenarios where the people dip their hands in transmission fluid and then have to shoot with the slimy, greasy hands. Because when you're in the mud, the blood, and the gook, that could be very realistic. You may have to shoot. Make people shoot non-dominant eye. Put eye patches on them. Make people, I can take my weapon apart blindfolded and put it back together. Yeah, on a kitchen table. Do it lying in the grass. Have people watching so you don't lose parts, but you get my point. Do it behind a few sandbags. Nothing's worse than having a bolt override in an AR-15 type weapon and having to break the thing down under fire in the dark, people yelling and screaming, and you've got to get that bolt out of there and get that round over the top. Some people say, once that happens, just throw it away. Well, that may not be an option. You may have to figure out a way to get that weapon operational again. Do it in the dark. Do it outside. You should know your weapon that well anyway. If you're a trainer or you're responsible for telling the trainers what to do, share with them what I've talked about today. I'm dead serious about this, folks. The only people who win are the people who take their training seriously. That doesn't account for the randomness of war. I understand that. But if you have a good attitude, a good spiritual grounding, good training, your chances are tenfold that you'll come back more than the guy who's just gone through 16 weeks of some training and he thinks he's all that. Let the process be the goal. Training never stops. There's all kinds of, train hard, fight easy. There's all kinds of sayings out there, and they all make sense. They're dreamt up for a reason. It's not just to put on candy bar wrappers, sell shoes. We don't know how bad it's going to be, but we know it's coming. Prepare your people. Get them ready. Well, I hope you like the show. I hope you like the way we present it. Help us out a little bit with donations. Won't kill you to send a few dollars this way. It'll keep us on the air. Sacrifice a little. Giving should be sacrificial. I know it is for us. Remember, go to DutchJones.info, DutchJones.info, J-O-E-N-S, J-O-E-N-S. Check it out. And then tune in tomorrow night. I think we're going to have the whole Shauna Ford jailhouse interview in the second hour. And then Monday we're going to have Lane Lawless on to talk about what they're doing to her. She's a political prisoner down in Pima County. And we're going to share with you that topic. And we will do the best we can. And Ed, I'll close it with his. Fight smarter. Fight smarter, Ed says. God bless you all and what you do for the holy cause of liberty. God bless and good night.